is Cascadia Public Radio.
Thank you all for coming out tonight. Let's give a big round of applause for ZeroPointRadio.com for broadcasting us. I'd also like to thank James Evan Pilato tonight, who did an interview with me just a couple days ago. We were talking about Operation Blackjack. I'd like to also welcome in the audience tonight some of the people who listened to that interview. Give them a round of applause for showing up and bringing their friends. That's an amazing thing, too. I'm happy about that for sure. So many things going on right now with the Ground Zero Lounge. So many things going on with our network that we are involved with right now, the ZeroPointRadio.com network. We just added another show. This one's called Chop Shop. It plays. It's a music show. We got music shows. We got news shows. We got all kinds of great stuff. ZeroPointRadio.com. In fact, they're coming to me now and saying, well, Clyde, what are we going to do to get what is known as a radio clock going so we can be on time and everything? I said, hey, it's the Internet. We can play whatever we want and do whatever we want. So that's the fun part about the Internet. So a lot of things going on. One of the things I want to comment on before we get into the show tonight is I want to talk a little bit about that interview that I did with James Evan Pilato, the interview about Blackjack. Many of you know that back in March we talked about Operation Blackjack and whether or not there was going to be a bomb that was going to be set off in Portland. There was some sort of a viral marketing campaign that was going on where there was a slideshow that showed terrorism happening all over the country, nuclear war, bombs going off just right up the street here. Well, what's really interesting is that none of those bombs went off. Of course, we're all here and everything's fine. But the interesting thing that happened was that there was something called Arden Shield. It was a drill that they decided to impose upon us. In fact, Oregon is a part of this drill right now. We haven't seen the troops move in or anything. I think a lot of the maneuvering is going on in the ocean. But they do have troops that are moving into certain cities. Now, some of the things that these drills were supposed to be actually practicing, that the military was supposed to practice at, was one of them was a nuclear device going off in a major city. And we've been hearing about North Korea and whether or not they're going to fire their nukes at us at July 4th, maybe Japan. The other was a disease that gets released from animals. That's the other drill. And then the third drill, which is very interesting, train derailments in major cities. How many people have been paying attention to the news? We have had two train derailments in the past 2 days. One was in Washington, and I think it killed six people. I'm not so sure where the other one was. Maybe somebody who's got their Chicago. Chicago and Washington. Washington, D.C., we've had these train derailments. So I find it very interesting that these things are taking place. Of course, we're talking about false flag drills, whether or not these things are a part of, you know, a practice run or the real thing. Well, we have to keep our eyes peeled because I did say back in March, we have 120 days before we start seeing all these things happen, these weird things happen in the country. Well, we're at that point now. And I gave some dates last week. I said the 18th, the 22nd. In fact, on the 22nd, from the 18th to 22nd, New York had a drill, actually a alert of nuclear war imminent, which I thought was interesting. We had that going on. Then I said, how about the 27th for something? 27th may be the time. Or July 4th. North Korea says that they may bomb Japan or they may bomb Hawaii on July 4th. So this is what we're looking at, people. We're looking at not being scared, but being prepared. And that's what it's about. This is not doom-mongering. This is not doom and gloom. This is keeping you informed because the mainstream news is not doing it. Okay? It's not that they're not reporting to you. It's what they don't report to you that you need to be aware of. Because they don't want to do is it's going to harm somebody's feelings or somebody's political views, their partisan politics, their advocacy journalism that I tell you is not beneficial. We're starting to see freedom of the press erode. We're starting to see objectivity of the press erode now in this country. And so what you need to do is in order to keep informed is to come here to the Ground Zero Lounge every Monday night and participate here at Dante's. Give Frank a round of applause for keeping this place going for us. Keep on buying your beer and pizza. That's what he wants you to do while you're here, and I'd like you to do that. Another thing we need you to do is to go to ZeroPointRadio.com online. It's simple. It's not something to download. You just go either to GroundZeroTotalRecall.com, Cascadia links, or you go to Media Monarchy links, or you go to any of those links that are on the websites, and it will take you to a player that will play, and you just set it and forget it. It sounds like a network because it is a network. It's a radio network, and it's not being broadcast from any terrestrial station. It's being broadcast on the net, and now low-power terrestrial stations are picking up the Ground Zero shows, Media Monarchy shows, all of those shows. In fact, right now, this audience is being heard in Casper, Wyoming. So say hello to Casper with a big round of applause. That's one of the stations that's reported. Man, okay. So let me tell you a little bit how the Ground Zero Lounge is set up. I'm the guy who does the talking, but I'm not the guy that has to do all the talking the whole time. What I'd really like for you all to do is I'd like for you to look here. There's a microphone here and a microphone here. I don't take well to hecklers. If you want to heckle me, you do it on the microphone. And the reason why I want you to do it on the microphone is because maybe your heckle is something that I need to know. Now, if you're intelligent and you can carry on a conversation and argue with me, fine. I'm not here to hurt your feelings. I'm here to tell you. You're here to tell me. We're here to exchange information. That's how the Ground Zero Lounge works. Some of the best information in the past and in the present have come from discussions in barbershops and in bars. We are a bar. We're talking. We're getting the conversation going. So if you have anything you want to say, say it on this microphone or that microphone, and please participate in the program because that's what it's all about. Tonight's show is called Family Tradition, Father from the Truth. And the reason why I'm doing this show is because I had a great... How many fathers are in the audience by applause? Fathers? By applause? Larry, we can't see your wave. We can only... Yeah, so go ahead and clap loudly, okay? Gotcha. Anyway, so I actually had a great Father's Day. I'm with my fiance now, Janine, and she's got a little boy, and he likes to call me Daddy, and he brought me a little gift and everything. But the only thing that really bothers me about Father's Day is that I am also an absent father. I have another child that I do not see. It's from a previous marriage. And being an absent father has haunted me for a long time. And I always get into these discussions about the metaphoric dark father and the absent father. And so Barack Obama actually did a speech about absent fatherism in talking about how his dad was an absent father or a dark father. And I figured it'd be appropriate to talk about the dark father metaphors and talk about a number of things. And as I was investigating the dark father metaphor, and I was investigating the absent father metaphor, I stumbled on some things about Barack Obama and his dad and the psychological makeup for people who have absent fathers. And what you're going to find out tonight is something you're not going to hear anywhere else. You're not going to hear on the mainstream news. And quite frankly, if the mainstream news got a hold of this, the country would probably go completely berserk. But this is all basically looked into. It's all researched, and we're going to talk about it tonight. Now, whether you like it or not, all of us think, we dream, and our unconscious minds are set in metaphors. A lot of us dream weird dreams, and we don't know why we dream the dreams, and so every once in a while you need to have them interpreted, because usually your dreams don't mean the literal thing. We dream in metaphors, and it's commonplace to make use of these metaphors. Most people, though, don't understand metaphors, and so if they don't understand them, they simply throw them away. But people who are in places of power, people who write movies, people who write books, they know how to use metaphors to get you to react. And so there are a lot of metaphors that if you find out about them, the world becomes a more mystifying and interesting place. And that's why tonight we give you a little lesson in metaphor, a little lesson in politics, and mix them all together, make some parapolitical spiel for you to listen to tonight and understand. The fact that your unconscious mind registers metaphors all the time make things very mystifying and very interesting. So that's what we're going to talk about a little bit in the beginning. As Father's Day has passed, I would like to address the metaphor of the terrible father, the absent father, or the dark father. The metaphor of the Saturnalian influence of the mysterious father and how the metaphoric dark family tradition has become egocentric and using the United States as an example of a larger family abuses its power over others so to protect itself and feed its own narcissism. It is important to recognize that the negative patriarchy is the deeper archetypical process that has seized hold of the militant left wing and is unconsciously playing itself out through Barack Obama and his questionable origins, questionable religious beliefs, questionable political philosophies, and his loyalty conflicts that stem from a dysfunctional family and lack of a positive father figure in his life. Now, as I say, around Father's Day, I'm always intrigued about the dark father metaphor. And I always get caught up in it. And somebody told me that, I guess it was Larry was telling me that he watched Star Wars over the weekend. Star Wars is about the dark father metaphor. That's the bottom line with this little movie that was made by George Lucas and made a lot of money. Basically, the dark father metaphor is a well-known metaphor where either an absent father or a competitive father leaves a child curious about his origins and worth. It is very reminiscent, as I said, of Star Wars, Darth Vader, and that's what Darth Vader means, actually. Vader or Vader means father, and Darth is, of course, a play on the words dark father. That's what it means. Luke lives on a vapor farm on a planet called Tatooine. It's a desert planet. And what happens is while he is on that planet, he's kind of discouraged about his life. He runs into an old man. This old man happens to be an associate of his father's. Says, hey, I knew your father when he was a pilot. I knew your father when he was a great warrior. You know what? You ought to be just like him. You ought to follow in his footsteps and be a great warrior and a pilot too. But of course, one of the things about the father situation is that when Luke finds out who his father truly is, when he finds out that his father is truly Darth Vader or the Dark Father, he realizes that his father not only betrayed his family, but betrayed his planet, betrayed his life, betrayed his race, betrayed his religious beliefs. And so now he has to figure out what he's going to do about that and how he's going to confront his father and basically make things balanced again. How many people have seen Star Trek recently, the new one, by applause? A couple of you? How many people notice that Star Trek is now just Star Wars? It really is. The new Star Trek is Star Wars, and I'll tell you why. James T. Kirk is a boy who is born when his father is killed while fighting the Romulans, okay? And he gets into a bar fight at a cantina, where have we seen this before, gets in a bar fight. All of a sudden, an associate of his father, Captain Pike, says to him, you should be like your dad and join the academy. There you'll become a happy guy. You'll be able to save the universe, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Where have we heard this story before? We heard it in Star Wars. Why did the story register with us? Because it is the dark father metaphor. Many of us do not understand why this touches us, because many of us have had fathers that have either been absent or negative or give us criticism. How many remember in Star Wars when Darth Vader was saying, your hate has made you stronger. Do this, do this, do this, or don't do it this way. He was being the dark father that was criticizing Luke. And that's how these dark fathers operate. They tend to do this. Now, there's a disproportionate number of characters in Disney films where both parents are either gone, or one parent is there, or you see the parent get killed. But in Disney films, it's the mother that is missing. And one of the reasons why the mother is missing is because Disney films try to push the metaphor of the protective father. The father that you will rely on to get you out of problems. The father that will always be there to take care of you if you need him. The idea of a father figure that will protect you, the protective father. Not the dark father, but the protective one. Now, as we're getting into this type of attitude, this type of philosophy and talk, and it's to set you up for what I'm about to tell you about Barack Obama, I have decided to bring onto the show right now someone who's very familiar to the Ground Zero crowd. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage Dr. Larry Johns. For those of you that don't know Dr. Larry Johns, he has a doctorate in theology, and he's been on my show many times, and anytime I start talking this deep philosophical, metaphoric stuff, he does a lot better at explaining it than I do, just to show you that I'm not out of my mind, and there's a reason why I'm educating you in this, because later on you're going to find out more about Barack Obama and his background. Go ahead, Larry. Welcome to Ground Zero Lounge.
Thanks, Clyde.
Go ahead and bring him up a little louder, would you? Thank you.
There we go. Well, the Dark Father is, of course, goes back a bit further than Star Wars. And it's probably significant to know that, well, there's two phenomena. Freud, when you go back to dreams, Freud was started out by interpreting dreams. Now, those of you who are young and you believe that Freud is discredited, in the psychological community, you will have to go back and question your professors as to why, and we'll go into that later. But the important thing is that Freud traced the relationship, what he called the Oedipal complex, between the son and the father as being the basis for all of our unconscious. Okay? In other words, there was a dynamic between the son and the father in the animal kingdom. In the world of the chimpanzee and the gorilla, the young gorillas are forced out and forced to fend by themselves, kind of like young Spartans did also for the Greeks, because they are a threat. And what is the threat to them personally? It's castration. Every male grows up afraid of being castrated by his father. Now, Clive mentioned Star Wars. For those of you who recall the first meeting of Luke believed that his father was killed by Darth Vader. He believed the lie. Okay? And Clyde's going to tell you a little bit later on the lies that we were forced to believe about Obama as well. So he learns the truth about his father, and then his father, in the fight, slices off his arm. Okay? His arm. Well, that, of course, substitutes for his testicles in the movie. But it psychologically, he regrows it in the film, and he comes to eventually acknowledge the fact that his father has betrayed everything. His father is not the protective father. His father has betrayed everything he thought his father would live to protect. Now, how many of you out there believe that if the Star Wars saga continues, and there have been novels written about that in the pulp field, that Luke Skywalker would go to the dark side?
I do.
By applause.
I believe it.
How many believe you just stay an innocent young man? Nobody believes that.
No, I think that it's true. I mean, the inevitability is that, and the reason why is because psychologically speaking, what I'm going to get into, so we can get into this about Obama, and we don't want to lay too heavy on the Star Wars thing. But all of this metaphor and this meme is pretty much inside all of us. It is part of our record inside of us. The father that wants us, or the father that's disassociated from us, and this sort of thing. Obama has the same problem. Obama gave a speech about Father's Day talking about abandoned fathers, and he said, "I wish that my father was more with me, but instead he's more of a myth." Go ahead.
But bear in mind, there's also the meme of the wise older mentor, as in Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon before him, and Luke could also go that way. It just depends on how the franchise shapes up, and I personally don't have too much hope for it.
But. Well, okay. So the reason why we're getting into this dark father stuff, we're talking about the child who sees a father as a threat and is similar to a slave, is because Nietzsche had also said that there was something called a slave morality, a master and slave morality. And what the slave morality is that when you are in a situation where the father figure is either absent or more powerful or criticizes you, you want to please that father. You want to please him, or you're fighting your ass off to try and conquer that father figure and try to put him out of your mind. This is where we start asking ourselves, who is the slave and who is the master? And then we start running into something called loyalty dysfunction. When we are dealing with a father who is absent or a father who is criticizes us, when we deal with a head of something that we consider a father figure that doesn't give us approval, we start becoming disloyal to ourselves and disloyal to others, fighting for that very thing to please those that are surrounding us. Okay? It's kind of a dysfunction. It's a psychological dysfunction that happens, but it happens when loyalty dysfunctions happen with dark father metaphors.
Put more simply, Klein, and I think you've said it, the son or the daughter will do anything to regain the love of the absent or dark father. So
that's why Luke went to Darth Vader and said, I know there's good in you, Dad. Don't kill me. Dad wanted to kill him. But Dad didn't kill him in the end. Dad basically went against his father figure, which was the emperor. You see, these things are memes and metaphors that Joseph Campbell wrote about. There are things that Lucas wrote about, and that the reason why these stories hit us the way they do is because deep down inside, I mean, there are a lot of movies, and not just that. There's, that movie with the baseball, Field of Dreams, you know? What was it that he wanted to do? He wanted to play catch with his dad because he told his dad that his hero, Shoeless Joe, was a crook. And so he wanted badly to get that feeling back again, get with his father, and have his father throw him a pitch and smile at him again. You see, and this is the deal with Obama. Obama is a conflicted man with quite possibly a lot of loyalty dysfunction because of the situation with his dad or dads, which we're going to get into in a little while, and how his family life was completely screwed up. And so we can pretty much figure out the personality of this man by how he was raised. It is the family tradition to be conflicted and dysfunctional when you're dealing with a dark father or an absent father. The task at hand is to defeat the dysfunction and understand what has molded us if we have that type of psychological dysfunction. Now, how the dark or absent father metaphor has created loyalty dysfunction, well, we have to see about Barack Obama. And many of you are probably already knowing where this is going because of loyalty dysfunction, what you hear in the news. And as we're talking about the Nietzsche philosophy, you can compare this metaphor to, I said, the master and slave mentality. Who's the master? Who's the slave? We have a group of slaves who basically say, we don't want to be a part of this. And then we have a group of slaves that say, but don't upset daddy. We don't want to make dad mad because dad is doing good for all of us. He's okay. Dad's a good father. And it's that constant struggle, that constant battle. Now, while thinking about the dark father metaphor, it helps to understand that there are two worlds within this existence, the world you think you know and the world that is. The world you think you know is being engineered by shadowy puppeteers, and you are unaware that you are chained to this reality created by them. We have maintained that which appears to be a group of assorted true beliefs of the what of things, but we stop in determining the why of things. There has been a lot of talk lately about the background of our president and how he has been influenced by many father figures and how he may or may not be an American citizen. Go ahead. Are you going to say something, Larry?
Yeah, I was going to mention here right in the sort of as you're shifting images. We have culturally experienced a phase shift. It's what I call personally in my philosophy a new medieval. And what this means is that individuals, and I'm sort of giving a prelude to the next point that Clyde's going to bring up, we categorize people in terms of red state, blue state, this, that, okay. It's all based on belief systems. And there's another category for heretics. Now, if you recall, when the right was in power, the 9/11 movement was called the 9/11 Truthers, the ERS. That tips you off that these people are heretics and therefore dangerous and can be shot on sight. Now, that the left is in power, the left wing is coming out and saying, the right wing is coming out and saying, oh no, Obama was not born in this country, and the left wing is calling them. Clyde, what is the term?
Calling them birthers. But birthers. There's something I want to get to. I want to get to what you're bringing up about that. Don't get too far ahead, because what I want to talk about is that before we get into the birther situation about his status here in this country, one thing you need to understand about Barack Obama is that Barack Obama literally is truly, he follows what is known as the monomythical hero. If you read Joseph Campbell, if you read Hero of a Thousand Faces, if you read The Power of Myth, Barack Obama is that hero. He is the reason why people follow him like he's a God or a Messiah is because he has all the traits. Missing father, having to go and fight his way to the top. You've heard his stories over and over again. And even Obama said about his dad. I didn't know my dad. All I can think of is that he is a myth, both more or less than a man. Obama's father figures in reality were his grandfather helped raise him. He was also raised by an Indonesian father. So he had all these father figures that were just absent in his life. Much like Luke Skywalker, much like Spider-Man. Spider-Man didn't have a father. Actually, Superman lost his father. You see, these father figures, these memes are there. And so he's a lot like Spider-Man or Luke Skywalker. Obama is already becoming a mythological being, much like his father before him. He fits the metaphor of the chosen monomythical hero to the letter. He's a cultural icon that has been called the savior of the world. George Lucas, who wrote Star Wars and read Joseph Campbell, Myth of the Hero, has even commented that Obama has fulfilled the monomyth. Where Joseph Campbell explained this, he said, a hero ventures forth from the world of common day into a region of supernatural wonder. Fabulous forces are there encountered, and a decisive victory is won. The hero comes back from his mysterious adventure with a power to bestow boons on his fellow man. There are few who fit this mold, but Campbell cites mythical beings such as Buddha, Moses, and Jesus Christ as being up there with Barack Obama as a hero. Obama does share another trait of Jesus and Moses. He had dark fathers. For example, while Christians believe in a miraculous birth for Jesus, there are those who also say that he was a product of either rape or that a man named Joseph was the natural father. The real father of Moses is not known either. It was shown in history that there were two accounts. The first Moses was the son of a man named Joseph, just like Jesus. However, the Bible states that the father of Moses was not Joseph, but Amram. There's also history that states that Akhenaten acknowledged Imram to be his divine father. And this is where a lot of people believe that Moses and Akhenaten are the same people. And here's something else. How many people have heard that Barack Obama is the Akhenaten or the Moses of our time? By applause. Anybody hear that? Of course. They're comparing him because of his hero's journey and his father's situation. Moses was allegedly a Hebrew. However, he had to have been indistinguishable from Pharaoh's other children in order for him to blend in and pass as a Kibite or an Egyptian. So that means that Moses came from a blended family, just like Barack Obama did. Take a look at Jesus Christ. The lineage of Jesus from Noah's line indicates a family of mixed races and indicates that Jesus Christ was also a man of color. Jesus' male ancestors trace the line from Shem. However, ethnically and racially, they were mixed Semitic and Hamitic from the time spent in captivity in Egypt and Babylon. Therefore, Jesus Christ was also a character of mixed race as well. In the United States today, the general view on whether someone is black is the one-drop rule. If a person has any black ancestors, they are considered black, even with clearly Anglo skin color. Take a look at Carol Channing. She has a black grandfather. Look at Mariah Carey. She considers herself African-American. Vin Diesel is also part African-American, considers himself African-American. George Kenneth Butterfield, the Democratic Party politician. He currently represents North Carolina's first congressional district in the United States, House of Representatives. Butterfield is an African-American. Does he look African-American? Does he or doesn't he? No, yes. No, not at all. He doesn't look African-American at all, but he says that he is African-American. Andrew Jackson was our seventh president from 1829 to 1837. The Virginia Magazine of History, Volume 29, says that Jackson was the son of a white woman from Ireland who had intermarried with a Negro. The magazine also said that his eldest brother had been sold into slavery in the Carolinas. Abraham Lincoln, our 16th president of the United States from 1861 to 1865, it's been quoted that Abraham Lincoln's father was a black man. He had coarse hair, he had dark skin, and it also said that there was a lot of interesting tidbits about his father being sterile. And, of course, this is a cartoon of Lincoln, an editorial cartoon calling him King Africanus, Abraham Africanus the First. So, yes, Abraham Lincoln was also of mixed race. Another one, Warren G. Harding, was of mixed race as well. They tried to keep it quiet, but he could not deny his heritage. He had a father that was a black man. Warren G. Harding doesn't look black, does he? No. But he was black and he was white, mixed. So, Family traditions and the secrets of fathers of our leaders have been buried in the memory hole of history. Even Thomas Jefferson and Calvin Coolidge have a black heritage that is seldom talked about. The only difference between Obama and these former presidents is that none of their family histories were fully acknowledged by others. So as we can see, it is common to hide sensitive information about presidents. It is reasonable to hide medical problems that a president has, but hiding family origins is very complicated for the presidency. The issue of Obama's race has now been used to illustrate persecution complexes on behalf of the Obots who are under the influence of Hope Gnosis. What are Obots? I'll tell you what Obots are. An Obot is an Obama robot programmed to see Obama as good and pure, incapable of evil, and a hero who must be robustly defended from criticism. An Obot will not use Obama's middle name for fear it'll be an insensitive thing. Obots think that the idea of using change's political platform is unique. Obots will use the word racist more than any other word in their vocabulary because it is a default response to any criticism of Obama. The problem with Obots are that they twist the truth to fit their persecution complex. They scapegoat those who do not drink the Obama Kool-Aid by calling them whack job conspiracy theorists. Now, American Obots invented a lot of emotion, put a lot of emotion into the last election. They invested in a candidate that based all of their campaign on the idea that he would bring about change. Even though many apologists are saying that this change is a long process, one thing has not changed since the election of Barack Obama, and that is the opportunity for people to pull the race card out of their sleeve in order to malign anyone who chooses to challenge anything Obama said. The American race card. What would Homeland Security do without this? Ever since Homeland Security gave us their assessment of new threats from homegrown terrorists, there seems to be an onslaught of crimes that have been conveniently exploited to further some trumped-up right-wing conspiracy against the country's first black president, which he is not. Most of this racist stuff, this wallpapering, is being derived from white progressives that assume that there is a growing group of racists that are hiding behind the 9/11 truth seekers, as Larry brought up, conspiracy theorists, and new groups of troublemakers that are called the birthers, those who question the origins of Obama. You see, some very prominent Obots in the media want you to believe that the birther movement, those who question Obama's citizenship, are angry because Obama is the first black president. But they tend to forget that other presidents have had family traditions that include a Negro heritage. This makes them racially insensitive or racially ignorant. They also say that the birthers are part of a racist, anti-Semitic, right-wing conspiracy. They have said that the birthers are Republicans who are racially offended about having a black president and that the birthers also hate the Jews. Well, fuck you. The Obots will say anything to push their agenda because the guy who started the whole Obama is not a naturalized citizen is a Pennsylvania lawyer who's a Democrat Jew. Yeah, that should get a laugh because these fuckers are telling you that it's a right-wing conspiracy. This was started by a guy who was a former attorney general in Pennsylvania. His name is Berg. He is a Democratic Jew who wanted Hillary Clinton to be president. Okay? And he said that Hillary was eligible and Barack Obama wasn't. So what these assholes have done is they have twisted the truth about the birther movement, saying that it's a right-wing conspiracy because these people hate Barack Obama because he's the first black president. I have not only proven that the media is full of shit by not pointing out that we had other presidents who are black. They are also full of shit when it comes to who started the birther movement. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you our fucking mainstream media. Thank you very much. Berg argued that Barack Obama was born in Kenya in 1961 to an American woman, Stanley Ann Dunham. Yeah, they named her Stanley. I know that's sad. Barack Hussein Obama Sr. is reportedly shown by a birth certificate from Mombasa Maternity Hospital that allegedly Obama was born in Kenya, which would make him a British citizen. Even then, if Obama's mother was the right age, he could have been a naturalized citizen, but he wasn't because she was only 18 at the time when she had the kid. Now, no hospital birth certificates have been produced to prove Obama was born in Hawaii, only a certificate of birth registry after the fact, which forensics experts have denounced as a forgery. New photos of the certificate were posted on the internet at factcheck.com, but factcheck.org or .com was also a front for the Obama administration, so they really weren't thorough with the investigation of that. Now, Barack's mother could have flown from Kenya to Hawaii right after the birth and reported that she had the child at home in order to secure that her son's U.S. citizenship was there. There's been no subpoena given to Hawaiian officials to provide an original hospital report of birth. This is what I think is interesting. Because, I mean, regardless of what you mean, I mean, I don't like talking about the, I don't know if Barack Obama is a naturalized citizen. Because quite frankly, he's president now, and I don't think the Supreme Court gives a shit. I don't think anybody else really gives a shit anyway. But, you know, it's Article 2 of the Constitution. This is our Constitution they're talking about here. And a lot of people are pissed off about this. But, I mean, a lot of people are saying, well, they produced evidence that he was a naturalized citizen. But I'm going to show you how they could basically fuck with this and keep him in the position that he's in. Go ahead.
Isn't this the same country that wanted to introduce a bill to change the Constitution so we could make Arnold Schwarzenegger president?
Yes. And they still are planning on it. It was Orrin Hatch that tried to hatch that bullshit thing to go on. In fact, there was a movie that talked about Arnold Schwarzenegger being president. It was that one with Wesley Snipes in it. What was it called? Time Cop? Was it? Demolition Man. Yeah, they talked about Schwarzenegger being president of the United States. I thought it was interesting. Now, moving on. When Obama was 6 years old, his mother remarried and moved with her new husband to his country, Indonesia. Records indicate Obama was naturalized as an Indonesian citizen. Now, Indonesia does not allow dual nationality, so even had he been born in Hawaii, he would have had to have lost his citizenship. Now, birthers contend that Obama's citizenship hinges first on whether or not he was born in the U.S. If he was, it then depends on whether he abandoned his naturalized Indonesian citizenship and reaffirmed his allegiance to the U.S. between 19 and 21, age 19 and 21. It says in Article 2, it says even if there's a question on his on a president's naturalized birth, that we have to determine his allegiances. Okay? We have to determine where his loyalties lie. Where have we heard this before? The loyalty dysfunction. Where are Barack Obama's loyalties? This is why people are worried about this whole situation, about his birth and whether or not he's a naturalized citizen. What makes a big difficulty for the birthers is that Barack Obama has gone by several aliases in his life. He was Barack Hussein Obama Jr., named after his father, which by default carries the father's Muslim heritage. Barry Sotero, his Indonesian name. Barry Obama, the name he adopted when he returned to America. And Barack Dunham, a name he also used. So we're all talking about the same person. Sotero, Obama, Dunham, whatever he decides to be, that's the name he chose. Now that's kind of suspicious when you change your name a lot like that. But I guess he's just trying to find himself because he's a young boy. Stanley Dunham, Obama's grandfather's military records, were destroyed in the 9/11 attack on the Pentagon. Now, as many of you don't know this, but he served with Patton's Third Army and was allegedly at Ohrdorf, the alleged Nazi nuclear weapon test site, and may have had some involvement with the American Operation Paperclip, where they were bringing Nazis over to join the CIA. He was part of that group, but his records have now been destroyed. Obama's mother worked for the Ford Foundation and USAID, both of which are said to be CIA fronts. Between 1947 and 1966, the Ford Foundation played a key role in the network of U.S. interference in Europe through subvention of magazines, scientific programs, non-communication left-wing organizations. The largest philanthropic organization in the world was, in fact, providing respectful facade for the CIA financial and contact operations. They excelled in propaganda, money laundering, and infiltration. That's what the business was for them. Deep intelligence reports claims that Stanley Ann Dunham, the female version of the Obama family, Barack Obama's mother, was known as a CIA cutout. Now, a cutout is an intermediary that facilitates the exchange of information between agents. Obama's mother, Stanley, was recruited by the intel agencies in the late 1950s with one purpose in mind. She was to infiltrate the rising black nationalists and civil rights organizations that were rapidly forming at the time. While the FBI was well aware of the rising tide of radical black Americans' infatuation with communism, the federal agencies had one small problem. Due to a long history of overt racism in their hiring practices, they had no black Americans as agents. Therefore, there was no one to infiltrate these radical black organizations. They quickly recruited black agents, but they realized the black agents didn't have enough experience, so they hired young white women to infiltrate into these organizations. Because there was only one way to gain the intimacy necessary to gather good intelligence, the young white women would have to have sex with these men. They had to create a relationship with them in order to gather data. This would explain why there are pictures that purport to show Stanley Ann Dunham, Barack Obama's mother, posing nude in these pictures here. And they're being avoided by the mainstream media, but there they are. Barack Hussein Obama Jr. could have been the result of one of the sexual encounters that Dunham had with the National Security Agents. From all outward appearances, it would appear that Stanley Ann Dunham, was passed around certain radical types like communist Frank Marshall and Barack Obama Sr. It's very likely that no one knows who the real father of Barack Obama is, which brings us back to full circle to the dark father or the absent father. The father of our president is not the man that donated the sperm for his conception. His father is literally the establishment of the stealth and shadowy CIA intelligence community. His citizenship is now a matter of national security and national intelligence because of the circumstances during the time in which he was conceived. This is why Barack Obama, we will never find out how he was born, where he was born, and why he was born, because he was conceived during a time of national investigations into rising communist planning with blacks. And we don't want to know what was going on because there are a lot of top secret things that went on during that time. We are becoming aware of Obama's background as a baby raised within the confines of the intelligence community. He was conceived during a moment of intelligence gathering, and there'd be no real stretch to understand why his birth and citizenship are a mystery. This is why we don't know anything about him. His slate's been wiped clean. He is an agent that has been raised not by just one dark father, but by a cabal of many dark fathers. His family is the company, and the company is his family. How many people remember the speech that he gave in Cairo, and he revealed something about intelligence? He said that the United States played a role in the 1953 coup of Iran when CIA worked to overthrow a secular leader at the time. How many people remember when he said that? A lot of people, some of you, loud, none. You don't pay attention to Obama's speech. Obama revealed that we were involved with a coup in Iran in the 1950s. Now, that's not a big deal to Americans. It's not some strange conspiracy theory, but in Iran, they had that as a conspiracy theory for a long time that the Americans were involved, and America denied it. Now, what's significant about him bringing that up out of nowhere, out of whatever, because it's part of his dark father heritage. Remember, when his father came to Hawaii, he came with a Jordanian exchange student and an Iranian exchange student. They left right after the coup. And I'm sure that that information was passed along to Mommy, because Mommy was one of those agents that was figuring out the uprising during the times of Iran, during the times of Kenya, during these times, they were exchanging information at the time. So Barack Obama saying this was probably him just basically divulging information that his family had known about for a long time. Didn't really matter to Americans about that, but it mattered to the Muslims, and he was kind of getting that information out of them just so he could feel like he was a good buddies with them. And I'm sure there's many things that President Obama knows about that goes on in the Middle East that we're not being told. Barack Obama, in my opinion, from what I can gather from what I've read, is not a naturalized born U.S. citizen. It doesn't matter, though, because his mother worked intelligence for the CIA to get information about communist and nationalist groups operating against U.S. interests. Obama was one of eight students selected to study Soviet studies in Columbia's IR program under Zbigniew Brzezinski, one of the CIA's top-ranking officers. Keeping up with the family tradition and to basically keep loyalties to his dark father, Zbigniew Brzezinski is now part of his foreign policy team. Zbigniew Brzezinski is a very, very, very evil man. And he is a part of this whole dark father force. Mentors, like Sarah brought up, one of the mentors is him. Now, strange things about Barack Obama. His college transcripts from Occidental College, sealed. No one can get to them. His college records and transcripts from Harvard are sealed. They have not been released. His college records and transcripts from Columbia are sealed, not released. His former client list at the law firm where he worked, sealed and not released. His official birth certificate, sealed by the governor of Hawaii, not released. Why the fuck have they kept all this under wraps? Don't you find that just a little strange that the President of the United States, his life has been sealed and no one can figure it out? I find that creepy, if not strange. So therefore, something going on with national intelligence is behind Barack Obama. Otherwise, I think you'd be able to see more of what he's about, but you can't. Obama is protected by the media, the court system, and the dedicated group of Obots who will quickly pounce on any negative discussion to overpower the discussion with insults toward anyone who dares to question Obama. Now, for those of you who don't know this, on June 24th, ABC News will turn its entire newscast over to the White House. The White House will dictate what ABC News does in the time that they turn it over to the White House because they are giving time to Barack Obama to pitch his health care agenda. Heard somebody cheer that. Are you for that? Who's for that? Why are you for, I know you're for health care. That's not the issue. Are you, come on up. Are you for the idea of a television network turning its entire network over to the White House? Well, I know that, but, okay, I need you on the microphone if you're going to talk. Okay, he said, this is what he said, is he said that every network is owned by someone, even Fox. I know that. It's called business. But when a government takes over a television station, we call that North Korea. We call that China. We call that state television. Okay, do you understand that? Do you understand that if the state takes over the television, it's no longer freedom of the press? You realize this. You realize that it's unethical to do something like that. You realize that even Fox News, even though they had their dicks in the fucking asses of the Pentagon, every goddamn time they open their mouth, every time O'Reilly acts like a fucking moron, you realize that they never, ever turned any of their shit over to the White House. Ever. ABC News has turned their entire studios over to Barack Obama. This is unethical, and it's state television. Welcome to communist United States of America. USSA. Advertising dollars is called business, buddy. Not having your government take over a television station. Go ahead. If you have something to say, say it on the microphone. I'm not going to address hecklers. I swear to God, I'm not going to. This is a radio show. We're doing it on the radio. If you don't want to talk, then fine. But you can come up here and talk. Go ahead.
Just to play devil's advocate for this, we actually elected the White House, which is, would be taking over the television stations, and we did not elect any of the CEOs running these mega corporations that are deciding which fates we have, which fates include not having health care.
No, I have to play the devil's advocate back at you. Television is known as what estate, my friend? The fourth estate? It's for sale now, and it's been bought. And you know what? It has to be independent of the empire in order to keep the empire honest. It's not doing that anymore. Fox News was a fucking abomination, and it always has been. ABC, no different than Fox now. I'm sorry, but when you play with government, you play nonpartisan. I'm certainly not going to be kissing Obama's ass just because he's decided that he wants to take over a fucking television station, a television network. I'm not going to do that. That is hypocritical. You can say all you want about Fox News when Bush was acting like a total fucking idiot, but now when Obama's going to do it, it's okay? No, it's not okay. How is it that Fox is so evil, but yet this is so good? Tell me.
Some of us voted for Obama. None of us voted for Rupert Murdoch.
Really? Well, I didn't vote for Rupert Murdoch, and I have a choice not to watch Fox, and I never really did. Okay? So I didn't watch Fox because I thought Fox was a bunch of fucking shills for the Pentagon. The Pentagon Channel is a bunch of fucking shills for the Pentagon. I was hoping that MSNBC, CBS, ABC were not shills for the Obama administration, but apparently they are.
I have a question. I'm not really sure about this. Who owns ABC?
Disney?
Hey, Clyde.
Get on right on microphone, please.
Yeah. Hey, all you guys that are clapping and you're all excited about Obama controlling the ABC, that's fascism. You really should study fascism, per se, fascism, as in Adolf Hitler and Italy. You don't seem to know if you're approving this.
Get on the microphone, please. I need you to get on the microphone if that's the way you feel. Get on the microphone, please. Go ahead.
What makes you think that we don't know what fascism is?
because fascism is a left-wing organization.
Okay, your judgment, your statements. Who's policing your statements? All right, I know what fascism is. Let me tell you something about networks. This is a global
fascism.
Communication system. It's a
fascism.
Global communication system. All right, a global communication system is there to disseminate facts and information. All this gentleman has said is, why not let somebody disseminate some facts, and why don't you judge whether or not a militarist government is taking action as a result of those communications?
But Tracy,
I don't think we're talking about militarism.
Tracy,
I think
why
we're
doesn't
talking
Obama,
about
Tracy, why doesn't Obama buy time on ABC? Why does he have to take over and make a mandate to take over? That, I think, is unethical.
I agree with what you're saying, and what I'm saying is it's an unusual circumstance, but it does not make it evil and
it
part of an
make
evil
it
empire.
Right.
And, you know, I want to address something else here, too.
Okay.
Who was your evil father, and are you just mirroring your evil father? Something that's not being talked about here is that our brain is bicameral. It has this choice or this choice. The entire concept of education lifts us out of, well, we have to either do what we were told by this person or we have to do what we were told by this person. I mean, all of us here listening to you tonight conceivably have been told one story or another story, and you are inviting us to make a new assertion. All right? Yet this description of Obama says he has no new assertions. He can only be a robot going by what he was told by
let me go on your point. I was going to go towards the end. Stay right here. I'll tell you this. Okay. Take a look at Obama. Okay? I want you to take a look at the loyalty dysfunctions Obama has. First of all, is he a Muslim or a Christian? No one knows. And I'm not saying that I give a shit. I don't care what his religious beliefs are. But I'm speaking for the entire country. They wonder if he's Muslim or he's Christian. Is he or is he not? He asked for the Jesus Christ stuff on Notre Dame to be taken down. Why? Does it make him feel uncomfortable? He didn't like the Pledge of Allegiance when he was running for office. He downplayed his Barack Hussein Obama name until he was standing in front of a bunch of Muslims in Egypt. And he says, I'm Barack Hussein Obama. I'm fulfilling the hadith of the 17th century. Kiss my ass. So, and here's another thing. Let's go for some others.
I don't think he said kiss my ass.
Well, I'm just saying. Here's another one, okay? Ready for this? Here's another one.
But I would have liked it if I'd heard it.
So what else does Obama do? Obama says, okay, we're going to go after those sons of bitches that tortured at Abu Ghraib and at Gitmo. Then he immediately reverses his situation because old Dick Cheney, his 16th cousin, is all getting all hot and bothered and pissy when that guy should be in jail.
Yeah, it's an abomination.
Okay. Good.
Hey, look, all I'm saying is there is the possibility of a rise towards a benefit, and I think that that's what people are speaking to. What if this guy is actually trying to point in the direction of benefit? And
that's not my argument. My argument is not that he's not doing a good job. See, this is the problem. You say something about Obama, it's either a racist thing or you're against his policies. I think Obama's got some great ideas. Don't get me wrong. But when you take over a radio or TV station, that is state television, and it is wrong.
He's being given that, though. He's not taking it over by force. Hey, look, I want to bring up something else, too. This is all a lot of talk. Hey, Obama is a black American. I'm a Native American, okay? Who would like to see a Native American president, huh? Yeah. Okay, so one of the things that I... Thank you. Our host is applauding, too. He likes the idea.
Oh, come on. I'm neutral.
Look, there's all of this talk about father, father, this, father, that. I have a dark father who was a U.S. military man who married five or six women and had children with all of them, and none of them knew about it. But here's the thing. I was raised with a Native American image that says, look, it's not about the father anyway. It's about the circle. And I'm just wondering if when you ask for this religious icon and that one and that one and that one to be taken down, if we're possibly not leaning in the direction of, let's not have any of these selected religious icons. Let's have a circle here. That's
cool.
My hope.
Thanks, Tracy. Thanks for that. Go ahead. Give him a hand. Go ahead. Good job. Thank you. Go ahead.
Who would like to see a Native American man or person, whoever, president? I am Native American Indian as well. Big whoop. Some of us have matured beyond caring what race our president is and pay attention to more important matters.
Yes, give her a hand there. That's true. That is true. The bottom line is, all the controversy about Barack Obama's citizenship could have been stopped with a $10 purchase of a copy of Barack Obama's birth certificate. But after millions of dollars hiring three law firms and Supreme Court decision to throw out the case, we still do not know about the origins and family traditions of Barack Obama. Why so much money going into protecting his background? Because it's an intelligence background, that's why. I swear to you it is. There was a quote that said, Watergate is Nixon's 800-pound gorilla everybody talked about, who sat there until it broke the sofa. The location of Obama's birth is an 800-pound gorilla that gets better and fatter every day, and nobody, at least nobody in major media, likes to admit its existence. There's never been a coming together of factors resembling this one in America's entire political history. No one has questioned the citizenship of a president. Ever. And now they are, and with that in mind, they should take it into consideration, but they're not. They're throwing it out. When Obama made his speech about the absence of fathers, he himself may have a lot of issues regarding his own father, his dark father, or the dark fathers and their philosophies influencing a young man who is already struggling with loyalty conflicts. This would explain once again why Obama is either a Muslim or a Christian, a black man or a white man, an American citizen or a man with dual citizenship. It is Barack Hussein Obama's inner conflict that we need to be concerned with and not something that is summarized with proof of birth. As I have said, Barack Obama fits the mold of Joseph Campbell's monomythical hero. Many of our heroes have had mysterious family traditions and secrets buried deep inside their psyches. Unfortunately, like Spider-Man and Superman, heroes have their kryptonite. As F. Scott Fitzgerald once said, show me a hero and I will write you a tragedy. I'm telling you this only because of what Barack Obama said about his absent father. Fathers do make a difference. How is the divorce rate in this country? And you were talking, Larry, come back up here a minute. You were talking about the father. We only got about 4 minutes, so quickly.
We'll make it quick.
Talking about how the father figure becomes the government, where we rely on the government because of the fact that we've had divided families and lack of fathers, and that's what the state wants. Go ahead.
Well, there's a two-pronged analysis. One, we've been talking about sons and fathers all night. But, of course, we need to talk about the daughters, too, and the wives. And since the 70s in this country, there's been a strong movement for the women to liberate themselves from their fathers, from their husbands. And to liberate themselves from their fathers and their husbands, either by taking their own names, by the divorce rate, raising lesbians, raising children on their own, whatever it is, whatever the epiphenomena is, the effect is that the replacement of the father, they have liberated themselves from their fathers and husbands to become more women, but then they reach out to the power that has enabled that to happen, which happens to be the state. So in conversation that we have had, it's been my contention, and I would back it up with a lot of facts, that the word fascism was thrown out earlier. It's my contention that it's women who actually support the fascist state, because in their desire for security, in their desire for protection, it's the women who make it happen. They're not the meek, protective and nurturing creatures that they pretend to be. And that is, again, comes from the broken families. Talk about, you know, we talked about how many black men growing up in this country know who their fathers are. Barack Obama is not the exception. Maybe 9% max know who their father are.
So when we're talking about the dark father metaphor and we're talking about the state, he believes that women support that. I don't know if anybody wants to debate that. It's kind of a controversial thing to say. I mean, I saw you laughing. I don't know. Yeah, go ahead. You want to go ahead and say something? I'd like to hear what your opinion is on this because you laughed about it.
I try to be as kind as I can politically about these things. But all this father-mother stuff, it's really such a myopic view of the world. I mean, really, I won't get started on my experience in understanding that, but the paternalistic authoritarian urge, whether it's religious and it takes expression in monotheisms or it takes expression in government authoritarianism, drives out diversity. It drives out different models. It drives out the possibility of experimentation in nature and in society. That's the source of the problem.
Thank you for that. Give her a hand. Thank you for your opinion. That's awesome. That is awesome. I just want to close by saying that we've heard the word fascism thrown around. We've heard the word state thrown around. We've heard all these words thrown around. The Dark Father, the metaphor, leads you to that, what is known as the master and slave morality. The slave morality is socialist state, or a fascist state. Now, socialism and fascism are two different things. I lived socialism when I was in Argentina. Socialism didn't hurt me. It didn't bite me. It didn't make me sick. In fact, they had a health care program that I could live with. And I'm not saying anything bad about Obama's policies with regard to health care. But what I do want to worry about is when we have our government goes into corporations and starts tinkering, when they go into television stations and the press and start tinkering, and they do it outright, I think you need to start paying attention and reread what Mussolini's fascism was all about, what Stalin's fascism was all about. Obama may not even know that he's doing this, or the people around him may not even know what they're supporting. I don't think that he's going in there thinking, I'm going to change the world to communism. I don't think like a right-wing person. But what I am thinking about is that when you have all these influences and you have loyalty conflicts because of your father missing, or the absence of the patriarchal, and also the absence of the matriarchal, and the idea of a cabal of father figures running the show like the CIA or whomever, this is where you have to understand the conflicts of interest and the loyalty conflicts, and how complexities such as these cannot easily be put in a box, and they can't easily be put in partisan politics. So, if you have decided that partisan politics is the way to play, which most of you have, because I say one thing about Obama, and immediately your obotic sensors start going off, keep in mind one thing, that we, as a people, are stronger than they are. There are more of us than there are of them, but they're winning because they started the revolution and we're still asleep at the wheel. I'm Clyde Lewis. This is the Ground Zero Lounge. Good night, and thank you for coming out. See you next week. Take care.